I left the CBC about 2 years ago to go to Afghanistan with an organization called IMPACTS, which is a Canadian non-governmental organization. It stands for the Institute for Media Policy and Civil Society. And they're actually based in Vancouver, but they have media projects in several different countries, including Cambodia, Nepal, and Afghanistan. And what IMPACTS is doing in Afghanistan is supporting the independent media that is just starting to come to life there, particularly supporting women in the media there. And I'll talk a little bit about that in just a second. But for example, we were running a newspaper project that was all Afghan women journalists writing about women in politics. I got to produce radio programs in Dari and Pashto, which are the two main languages there, with a team of young women broadcasters who were learning these skills for the first time. It also meant that I got to establish independent women's radio stations in various provinces of the country, right from mixing the mud to make mud bricks to helping with the first lessons in digital sound editing. So I had a blast there. I was supposed to come back to my job with the CBC 6 months later, which didn't really happen. I ran off and didn't come back for about a year and a half. And my heart is still there in many ways. I'm hoping to go back this summer. So those were some of the things that I was doing there. And working, for the most part, with Afghan journalists. I did a little bit of freelance work of my own for CBC, but for the most part, I was working with Afghan journalists as they were covering the events going on for their own media. Mostly radio, but a little bit of newspaper as well, working alongside men and women, but mostly women journalists. People often ask why women and why radio. The short answers to those questions, I'm sure you know about the situation of women in Afghanistan under the Taliban, but even far beyond and before the Taliban came into power. Women's lives have been very restricted in Afghanistan. During the Taliban period, women weren't allowed to work or to go to school, so a lot of women desired to go to university, to pursue a degree, to get an education, to become journalists, but maybe hadn't finished high school, maybe hadn't even started what we would consider to be junior high school studies. So they were trying to catch up on a lot of stuff in a very short period of time. And so for that reason, their counterparts, their male counterparts, may have been able to attend university, may have been able to pursue other jobs, but for women it was a lot harder to enter the workforce and to get involved in the media. And what we were finding in Afghanistan is that that women's voices just weren't represented at all in the media, whether print, radio, or television, whether state or independent broadcasters. There weren't women's voices as announcers and hosts, and there weren't women's voices as people being interviewed. There are all kinds of reasons for that, but we felt that it was really important to get women's voices involved and to encourage the participation in public debate. Why radio? Quite simply, literacy rates are really, really low. I think it's got the third lowest literacy rates in the world. Somewhere between, depending on who you ask, between 15 and 20% of the people are able to read and write. But even in those cases, many people say that they're able to read and write if they're able to recite from the Quran, for example, which doesn't necessarily mean that if they picked up a newspaper about the presidential election campaign that they would really understand what was happening. And of course, I think it's about 3% of the country actually has access to electricity, so televisions aren't much good for anything there. So radio is the medium of choice. It's cheap to produce, it's cheap to receive, and it's very accessible because everybody has a voice and most people understand each other, even though there are differences in dialect, of course, and language, but for the most part, it's a good medium to get messages out there. So talking a little bit about disasters, now I'm teaching at the University of King's College in the journalism school, and we talk a lot about the ethics of disaster reporting and what attracts the media to a disaster like flies to honey. There's a difference, though, I think, between natural disasters and disasters created by humans and the way the media responds to them. Particularly because, yeah, they're the foreign reporters who drop in, say, for 4 days, try to cover the story and get out because they have to get to the next disaster area. And then there are the local people who are trying to report on whatever crises are going on in their own communities. So as the media and as people back home in Canada who are listening or watching television, how do we respond to those disasters differently? I think with natural disasters, floods, droughts, earthquakes, hurricanes, those kinds of things, it's in many ways an easier story for the media to tell, particularly the foreign media. It happens, like some cataclysmic event happens, and then usually it's relatively safe for reporters to drop in. The earthquake has already happened, the flood has already come and gone, and then the reporter can go in, assess the damage, talk about kind of recovery and relief, and then leave, and we never hear about it again. There are often also sort of feel-good tales about unlikely survival stories or people helping each other, which are easy stories to sell, let's just say. And selling is part of it for sure in many of the media in Canada. Also, people back home, as we saw overwhelmingly after the tsunami, reach into their wallets, give $50 to the Red Cross, feel better about themselves, and then forget about it. I think with the human-created disasters, it's a whole different kettle of fish. From the reporter's point of view, from their manager or editor's point of view back home, and from the viewer's point of view, whether it's a war, an occupation from outside, a civil war that rips things up from inside, a famine, ethnic cleansing, situations like that, it's really hard to escape the responsibility. And whether it's some ruler or government force or military, or whether it's our own interests economically, politically, security-wise, whatever, we're starting to realize, I think, that we all have a stake in all of these stories. Whether, I mean, even if they're happening in places we may never have heard of before, somehow our interests are connected. And I think that it makes it a harder story to tell. It's more complicated. It takes more than 4 days sometimes to figure it out and report back. It also makes it a harder story to sell. And I've been very lucky. I've worked with a public broadcaster where we're not faced with the immediate pressure to find advertising dollars from large corporations and other sources, so it's not as much of an issue. But if you're working in any of the private media, no matter how good a reputation you may think they have for quality journalism, somewhere somebody has to face the advertisers, and that can be a big problem when reporting on either corporations and their involvement in conflicts, or governments who are supported by other governments and their involvements in conflict. And it becomes, like I say, it's a much harder story to figure out. It's also a much harder story to sell to your advertisers. And to, I think in some cases, the public, although I think there is more and more an appetite for that. So suddenly, flying a Canadian reporter into a place like Haiti or Afghanistan can have political implications. And as we've all heard this week with the horrible story of Kazemi in Iran, there's a potential for disastrous results in so many different ways. So it becomes a political situation sending a reporter in somewhere to try to figure out stories like that. And I think it goes beyond, too, in terms of the audience's reaction, it goes beyond maybe giving $50 to the Red Cross, and then it becomes, for people who bother to think it through, I wonder where my retirement savings fund is being invested. And sure enough, you know, CBC employee, my retirement savings fund is being invested in all kinds of interesting companies with business in Sudan and other places. If you ask yourself those questions, what are the politicians that I elected doing about this? Maybe not so much. Where are the products that I'm buying every day coming from, and what does that mean? It forces us to ask ourselves these questions. I think in a way, when stories about human-created disasters are being reported on, rather than simply natural disasters like earthquakes and floods. I mean, with a natural disaster, of course, the way that people react to it and their ability to survive and get through and recover and rebuild, of course, that does depend on a whole bunch of human factors as well. But the connections aren't as obvious as when it's a war where we have a political or security interest at stake, whether it's food or fuel that comes from that part of the world. The human-created disasters, I think, are the ones that are more complex and harder to make those create those links. My only experience in a disaster zone has been in Afghanistan, where, as Chloe said, I spent about a year and a half, and I was really lucky. I got to spend some time in Kabul, in the capital, but I also traveled around quite extensively through about 10 different provinces and lived in several areas when we were helping to build these radio stations. And I would say that it's still a disaster zone. I mean, officially, according to my insurance forms, it's a conflict zone. According to the United Nations, it's a post-conflict zone. I think it's still a disaster. I mean, I'm very optimistic about its future, but I think there are so many obvious signs. There are, everywhere you go, there are tanks. There's artillery everywhere. Whole communities reduced to rubble that haven't been able to rebuild, whole parts of the capital city, Kabul, that are reduced to rubble. The roads are still just rutted. You can't drive without veering around the enormous craters created by the RPG.